Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Ninsel, the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly and Tucson Local Media. And today we are talking with Ed Ackerley, an independent who is running for mayor of Tucson. Mr. Ackerley has been involved in advertising as an executive here in the community for many years and has also been really involved with the Tucson Boys Chorus. And Ed, a lot of people probably don't know who you are, so talk a little bit about who you are and why you're running for mayor.
Well, thank you, Jim. I was born and raised in Tucson in 1958. I'm the youngest of seven of the Ackerley children, and I went to Palo Verde High School here in Tucson, graduated in 1976, and then on to the University of Arizona, where I graduated in 79 in radio and television of all degrees. And then 17 years later, went back to Northern Arizona University and received my master's and doctorate in educational leadership. In 1968, my parents opened an advertising agency in Tucson, so our company is 51 years old. I've been there for 44 years. And I'm one of the principals along with my brother, and we do local advertising for firms and nonprofits. And then 28 years ago, I was asked by the University of Arizona to come down and teach a class, and I've been there for that length of time, teaching in the Eller College of Management, the Fine Arts College, and the Social and Behavior Sciences College. So I have three appointments at the U of A. And I also teach at Northern Arizona University in their master's program, public administration, educational leadership, and business. So I have a varied background in teaching, advertising, and I also have a career in association leadership. I was at one point the president of the Tucson Advertising Club, and then went on to become the chairman of the Council of Governors of the American Advertising Federation, which is the world's largest advertising association. So I have a lot of leadership experience in large organizations and helping everything from small nonprofits to companies grow their business here in Tucson. So the question comes up a lot, why are you running for mayor of the city of Tucson? And I just have to say that, you know, for the last 60 years, I've been watching the parade go by, and I have enjoyed it. I've enjoyed living in Tucson. My family raised their kids here, and my mom and dad had a great career at Ackerley Advertising. And my wife and I have been married for many years, and we have three sons who have all grown up in Tucson and enjoyed a good life. And now I have two grandsons, Nolan and Patrick, age 7 and 5, that are growing up in Tucson. And the question really is what's the legacy going to be for Nolan and Patrick when they're 57 and 55, 50 years from now? What is our Tucson going to look like? And what difference did Ed Ackerley make in the life of Tucson and in the lives of my grandsons about the legacy that we leave behind? So I have kind of a personal motivation. I love my city, and I have some kids and some grandkids growing up here, and I just want to do what I can to help the city grow in the right direction. So that's why I'm running for mayor. I think I have the leadership experience, and I think I prepared all my life for something like this, and that's why I'm running.
And you are running as an independent. We, of course, have three Democrats in the race, Steve Farley, Randy Dorman, and Rahina Romero, and they have a primary at the end of August, so we'll see who you are running against at that point. We don't have a Republican on the ballot. Why did you decide to run as an independent instead of on the ticket of one of the two big parties?
Well, I did a political analysis of it, and of course, the numbers just don't add up for the Republicans in the city of Tucson, especially with the way the voting goes with the citywide and ward voting system that we have. There's about twice as many Democrats registered in the city of Tucson proper than there are Republicans. As a matter of fact, there's more independents registered than there are Republicans in the city. And, you know, running as an independent, really, I believe that I'm actually running as a Tucsonan and not necessarily as an independent. I don't believe that the potholes or the police and fire issues or the parks issues are Democrat and Republican issues. They are the issues of all Tucsonans, and they're problems that we need to come together and fix together And, you know, throughout the state of Arizona, most major metropolitan municipalities run nonpartisan elections for their local elections. And they just pick the best people who are running at the time to be the leadership of their town councils or their city councils. Tucson happens to be a charter city and happens to be running on a party situation. And not that that's bad. It's just different from other cities in the state. But I do believe at municipal level, when we're dealing with police, fire, transportation, garbage, water, parks, libraries, development services, those types of issues, which are municipal in nature, that whether you're a Republican or Democrat doesn't necessarily matter as much as who's the best person to lead the city through those fixing of those issues. So it's basically a math thing that a Republican can't win. Maybe a coalition of a Republican, independent, and those that are maybe not so enamored with the final nominee of the Democratic Party might come over and vote independent. I think I have a real shot at it running as an independent as opposed to running a party affiliation.
Well, we did see not that long ago Bob Walkup, a Republican, use a similar strategy, and he certainly was able to serve three terms as mayor. So it's not necessarily a Democratic lock in this town. A big issue on the November ballot, the Families Free and Together initiative, the so-called Sanctuary City initiative, would limit the circumstances under which Tucson police could inquire about the immigration status of people they are talking with, and also limit the city's cooperation with federal law enforcement agencies. Do you support this proposition?
I do not. I am opposed to the proposition and the initiative as written, and I believe that it is would be to the detriment of the city of Tucson. And in general, I'm opposed to the sanctuary city label for our city. I just want to clarify that by saying that, you know, our city has been welcoming for centuries, and I personally, growing up in Tucson, have been party to helping immigrants and helping people who are less served. And this is an issue that is that has been confounded between politics and religion and other things. And so I am not making a judgment as to whether or not anybody that's traveling for miles that comes to the border and has an issue with getting into the country and where do we put them and how do they move on and are they legal and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is if we label ourselves a sanctuary city, we have the potential of losing visitors and companies coming from Milwaukee to Tulsa, from Nashville to Provo, Utah, who say, well, I'm not going to that city because they're a sanctuary city, and so I'm not going to go vacation there. I'm not going to build my business there. I'm not going to send my kid to the University of Arizona because I disagree with that political statement. And what that then does is lower the tax base, which is what drives our budget for our city, and that, in effect, then takes away money that would be the very money that we would use to help mitigate the problem of the immigration flow, which is part of the general fund. So from just a purely economic and political viewpoint, it doesn't make sense to label ourselves. It would be akin to using an analogy of, you know, if you're left-handed, don't come to Tucson. Well, why would you ever do that? That doesn't make any sense. The reverse side of it is, well, we've got to do something about the immigration problem, and we've got to make sure that we're, you know, the immigration problem is a federal problem, and our federal legislators need to solve that problem, and they need to solve it quickly. And our state needs to be involved in that, and they need to work on it from a state level. What we are is the recipients then of inaction or action that the federal and the state legislators are doing or not doing, and we're carrying the burden of that. It doesn't make sense to me that we would, from an economic viewpoint, then burden our city even more by saying we don't want our tax base to be growing. So I come at it from a commonsensical viewpoint. And I'm not coming at it from an emotional viewpoint. I think that it would just be in the long term, not in the best interest of our community to label ourselves something that is going to turn off, you know, potentially half of the United States to come see us and spend their money here. So I think there's other ways to mitigate the immigration problem and to help these people that are coming across the border and reach out. And I think we have some examples right here in Tucson already. And I think that is more of a humane and better way to treat these folks than to just take a label that is going to be toxic for the rest of the country.
And I'm hearing very similar things from the current members of the Tucson City Council and the other Democrats who are running for mayor. And they say that the city already has set up much of this within their policies for the police department. Does that give you any heartburn, the current policies that the city has regarding immigration?
Ironically, some of the people that helped write this initiative that made it onto the ballot with the signature process helped craft those general orders and those response that the City of Tucson Police Department uses to address these kind of problems. So it's kind of ironic that some of the actual people that were helping us craft that wording were part of this initiative. So I'm of the feeling that, you know, there is a problem. We've pointed out that there's a problem. Obviously, we have an influx of immigrants coming through, and the county is involved now, and the monastery, and all the things that the city has done, and nonprofit groups have done, and religious groups have done to help mitigate this problem. I think that the city has a manageable, proper response to it from a protocol standpoint with police and with our agencies. And I think we need to solve the problem on another basis, which is obviously federal and state, but also from our city, to continue to provide the services that we can to these immigrants so that we can do it in a humane, respectful, and dignified manner.
And let me shift gears over to development. Now, we've certainly seen a lot of development in downtown over the last decade, and we're seeing some major developments now happening along 4th Avenue. Some apartments going up at 4th Avenue and 6th Street, some others further south near the underpass. And some folks are worried that the unique charm of the local businesses along 4th Avenue could be lost as more development happens there. Do you share that concern, and do you have any kind of vision in terms of the future of 4th Avenue?
Well, I believe that in 50 years, Tucson will look different from what it does today. When I was a young kid, 10 years old, you know, my street out to the east side was a two-lane dirt road, and now it's a six-lane expressway, basically. And so things do change, and building happens, and people move, and people move out, and other people move in. And so I'm a practical guy. Our city is going to change, and I was privy to the 1970s and 80s, the no-growther movement, that, you know, we're not going to expand, we're not going to put in freeways, we're going to keep our town a little town. And I think actually we're paying the price of that right now in 2019 with our road situation, with even our water infrastructure, where we grew out and we didn't fill in the density in the core. And I think that we were lucky to have a shovel-ready $63 million USA grant to come from the Obama administration to help us with the streetcar, to help revitalize downtown, because, you know, we run the risk of expanding out and creating a density problem where we have large infill problems. So I'm just here to say I'm a practical person. As we're in a climate and an economy where our city is going to grow and more people from California and other places are going to move to the city of Tucson, what is the plan in place to make sure that as we grow, we have enough water in 50 years to maintain that level of population, that we have the roads that are in good shape to cover that we have police and fire at a level that can accommodate that kind of influx of population. And yes, let's be sensitive to historical buildings and historical neighborhoods and cultural areas of town. But let's also be practical and say, we're going to grow. How do we manage that growth and make sure that we respect the past, respect the future, and do it in a way that's meaningful? So I come at it from a very practical perspective. We're going to grow. It's how we do it is the answer.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Nintzel, and we are talking with Ed Ackerley, an independent candidate for mayor in the city of Tucson. And Ed, we hear a lot about potholes in the city of Tucson. The city has managed to pass a bond issue a few years back that allowed them to do some work around town on the roads within the city of Tucson. They now have a sales tax that is also contributing to road work. But do you think the city is on the path that it needs to be in terms of getting the roads fixed within the city of Tucson, or does more need to happen? And if more needs to happen, where do you think the money should come from?
Well, I do believe that the budget is the list of priorities, and I think that the budget has reflected the fact that the roads has been a problem for the last 10 years. Basically, that comes from the lack of economic development because of the recession, and the money just wasn't there. But it also comes from the state sweeping the HERF funds and other areas of money that we would be using for roads. So here's a couple of things. One, I do believe that we should, if we can, reauthorize bonds so that we can continue to work on roads. You know, we have some roads that haven't been touched in 40, 50, 60 years, and they're in disrepair, and we just haven't had the means to be able to do that. And then our major thoroughfares have so much traffic, and because of the climate we are in with 110 degree heat and cold winters, it really wreaks havoc on the asphalt. But I do believe that introducing the plastic bottles into the asphalt, which I've talked about a lot, could help mitigate the pothole problem. Fixing potholes is a remedy, a short-term remedy, to try and preserve the surface. But obviously, at some point, we'll need to resurface the streets on our major thoroughfares again and do that on a regular basis. So a couple of things. I am in favor of the RTA considering a portion of their allocation to go towards road maintenance as opposed to just road construction and so forth. And I believe that that probably will be an item of discussion, may actually go through if RTA is reauthorized. I'm in favor of that because that gives us another pool of money to work with. I'm excited to see that the county has increased their allocation towards road maintenance to a significant amount. That will help, especially in the outskirts of Tucson, which are county-maintained roads as opposed to the city proper. And I do believe that we do have the infrastructure in place within the city to do a better job on roads, and that would be one of my top priorities. It's the number one thing that people talk to me about is please fix our roads. And I do think we have other things that we can do, like the hawks, these crosswalks that are across major thoroughfares that when one single person walks up and pushes it, it immediately stops traffic and everybody, you know, 50, 60 cars wait for one person to walk across the street. I think those could be updated with technology to let them cross the street when there's less cars coming or no cars coming. That would be safer for the pedestrian and better for traffic flow. We have several hundred traffic lights. They're not in sync with one another because they're there's not technology behind them. We could use technology to make the traffic flow much smoother. And these types of things also help with the mitigation of roads and so forth. So it's a big problem. I think the city's done a good job of managing with the resources they have or haven't had. But it's one of my number one priorities is to work on this road problem. Let's get this fixed. As Tucsonans, let's get this fixed so we can build economic development. You know, people come into town to say they want to put a company here and the roads are in disrepair. What message does that send to them? And I'll even go a step further and say, if we can't even clean the median, the traffic islands, and they're a mess, you know, we got to do a better job. And I think we can. And I think we just need to make a commitment to that.
Let me ask you about one of the major projects that's underway. The city is starting work on widening Broadway between downtown and Country Club, and this was a contentious fight. The project got scaled back from 8 lanes to 6 lanes. And do you think the Broadway widening makes sense? And do you, if so, do you think the city's approaching the project in the right way, or is there some other more sensitive way the city should be approaching the project?
I think this dates back to, you know, what I talked about earlier about the no growth situation in the 60s, 70s and 80s. And when we would put in 2-lane roads and then later come back 5 decades later and need to make that a 6-lane road. How does that impact the businesses that are and houses that are sitting right there on the path of that road? So obviously complete streets and viewing roads and what the future will look like is really important for the future. But it is what it is. We have roads that are very heavily traveled, and we need to, as a community, come together and solve that problem. And I have know a lot of people and have had clients that have had businesses on Broadway or other streets that have the city has come along and had to condemn or purchase the property from them. And, you know, that's a difficult thing. But, you know, if we give a fair value and we can help people get set up in other places and you know, you ask a person, hey, if I gave you, I just was at a neighborhood group Wednesday and someone was talking about this. I said, well, if they offered you twice what your house is worth, would you be as upset? And, you know, is kind of the, well, no, that's a different story. If, you know, if I get value for it or whatever, then I'll be happy to move. So I think, you know, we have to be culturally sensitive. We have to be sensitive, but we also have to be realistic about the growth and about the need for moving transportation, moving cars in this community. We're a car-centric community, and we just need to be sensible about it. So I'm answering your question by saying I do think the city has done a good job. It has taken forever to get this process moving and going forward. And I think we could move it along a little faster if we come together as a community and say, what is the overall transportation plan? And everyone, helping everyone buy into that process.
And again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Nitzel, and we are talking to independent candidate for mayor, Ed Ackerley, who will be on the November ballot. And let me ask you about, as long as we're talking about a car-centric town, we do have our transit system, which has several funding sources. You get the federal dollars, you get the fare paid by riders. But there's also a significant investment from the city's general fund. And some folks complain the city spends too much from the general fund on the transit system. Some folks say it spends too little. And some folks say it's the Goldilocks solution. It's just about right where it is. What are your thoughts about the city's investment in transit? And what would you like to see happen with the bus system?
Well, I think one of the most important things that, you know, the city can do is to make sure that people who are underserved, who need the use of public transportation, get that service. But I also believe that in the 2019 and the 21st century, that we need to be looking at how we can use technology to make sure that we're not sending empty buses down a street every single day, and that they're only used at a couple of high peak times and the rest of the time that they're empty. And this is a really touchy issue because it obviously involves jobs, it involves unions, it involves underserved populations. And so not a lot of people like to talk about that. And that's probably one of the reasons why we have a system that's kind of grown by topsy the way it has, is because it's a touchy subject and people don't want to embrace the. What I'm talking about is, why don't we just do it smarter? Why don't we provide the service? Why don't we make sure that we have the right things, right vehicles going in the right places? And maybe we don't need a 100-passenger, 50-passenger bus all the time in all the places. Maybe we could look at some models from California and other places where smaller vehicles are taking smaller groups of people in different directions, so that more of a hub system and a little less of this. The only way that we can do it is with big giant buses running down the street. And so I just think that an overall comprehensive view of mass transit and understanding what we need and what we can do, and use technology to help us come into the next century and be more realistic about what we can do. And I think what has happened is, because of the structure of the way it's always been, that attitude of, well, this is the way it's always going to be, I'm just not sure that that's the right creative solution to this problem. We do spend a lot of money on it. We should be spending the money the most wise way that we can.
And Tucson has certainly seen some wins on the economic development front in recent years, but poverty is still a significant problem, especially among single moms in our community. Do you have any strategies for combating poverty on the local level?
Well, I do think this sounds counterintuitive, but I think it's also exactly where we need to be. I think we need to concentrate on making sure our police and fire are adequately funded and adequately staffed. We need to make sure that our roads are safe and that they're clean and that they're pothole free, and that they're, and we need to make sure that our parks are clean by charter. That's one of the things that we do, safe and clean parks. We got to make sure that we have enough water. You know what that does? That then attracts businesses who want to come to Tucson and provide jobs that are higher paying, so that our residents can have a better living wage. I also believe that we need to do a better job in the economic initiatives area in taking those companies like mine. I've been in business for 51 years, and for the first 50 of those years, not one person from the city of Tucson ever popped their head in my door and said, hey, how can the city of Tucson help your business grow? And just think that if businesses like mine could hire one more person, what the impact that would have on the city in terms of the poverty level and people not having adequate paying jobs. So if we get the blocking and tackling done right, where we have good public safety, we have good roads and transportation, we have great economic outreach, development outreach, so that we can provide companies with a reason to come to Tucson, so that they can provide the jobs that we're looking for. I think that's the strategy we need to employ. And we need not be saying that, oh, we're just going to be stuck in this minefield of not having enough jobs and enough high-paying jobs. You know, we can all complain. Let's do something about it. Let's fix this problem. And if we fix the infrastructure like we're supposed to, people will flock to Tucson because we have good roads. We have good parks. We have adequate public safety. We have good mass transportation. We have the things that we need, that a vibrant city needs to have. So I come at it from, a really practical viewpoint here. You know, we can send money to try and get people better jobs, better housing, and so forth. Well, that helps, but we need to fix the whole problem, and that comes to those areas that I've talked about in my major plan.
And you mentioned earlier proper funding for public safety, and I do hear concerns from folks out there that our police force is understaffed. Do you think the city should be spending more money on public safety, or is the current budget about right?
Well, we're about 60% is involved in public safety. That's a lot of money spent on public safety right now. But I do think we have a couple of problems that, again, it's being smarter with the resources that we have. Let me give you two examples. One is, you know, right now, if there's a water main break or there's a something going on somewhere, and so we call 911 because we don't know where to call. We call 911 and say, hey, you know, there's a water lane break and it's all over the median, and so 911 gets involved, and then that involves the police and fire, and you know, we're sending a fire engine down the street to go, you know, help a guy that's on the bus bench that's maybe having some mental problems or something, and we're using resources in the 911 system that shouldn't. So I am proposing that we fund finally the 311 call system. And what 311 is when it's a non-emergency, non-life-threatening call, and a citizen wants to report something, whether it be a pothole or whether it be a mental illness case or whether it be a broken water pipe or whatever, that they can call 311 and that they can be directed to the appropriate city, county, state, federal agency that can help them, or even a nonprofit. That will free up then the resources that we have dedicated to 911, which are life-saving and high priority calls for the police and fire. That alone would help us be able to move our police and fire to the places they need to be to do their real job. Instead of the second thing that I would do is I would increase substantially increase the TC3 care, the collaborative care, where we send out a vehicle instead of sending a fire engine, you know, in 4 minutes to a particular call, a 911 call that is not life-threatening. We send out a vehicle with two professionals, a paramedic perhaps, or a nurse practitioner, and someone maybe skilled in mental illness, and they go and respond to the guy on the bus bench or the person who's having not sure whether or not they're having a heart attack, they're just not feeling well. Instead of sending the whole entire crew from the fire station to that place to respond, and they do have heavy users which call the fire department all the time. And if that is true, you know, you want to make sure you have the resources at the ready. But if we could free up the fire and police to do the job that they need to do without. So 311 and the collaborative care process are two ways we can take the budget we already have and rearrange it just a little bit to make sure that we're applying. So with less officers, we can do perhaps more work based on this model. So there's just two examples of how you work smarter and use the resources you have without necessarily having to increase the city budget for public safety.
Okay, and we are out of time. I've been talking with Ed Ackerley, who's running for mayor as an independent. And Ed, if folks want to learn more about the campaign, where do they go?
My website is ackerleyformayor.com. You can also call me on my cell phone, which is 520-850-7058. I enjoy speaking with constituents and be happy to take a personal phone call from somebody. But ackerleyformayor.com if you want to make a donation or help out the campaign or learn more about me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Zona Politics today. I am your host, Jim Ninsel, executive editor of Tucson Weekly and Tucson Local Media, and we will be back with you guys next week.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of The Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org. Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.